Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden, and Beth Morris should be familiar to all of you. Tonight, she is joining me as the producer of tonight's broadcast. You're living your life right here where you grew up. You've always been here. Your life is here. You're a part of the community. Until, without reason, certain individuals somehow perceive you differently. Maybe because of your ethnicity or religion. And it's often heightened by very recent events to which you're completely uninvolved, or perhaps quite geographically removed. Tonight is the first part of a series focused on your workplace, examining irrational acts of hate or intolerance aimed at one's race or religion, appearance or ethnicity. More prevalent than most folks are aware, Islamophobia is an irrational fear of, aversion to, or discriminate against Islam people who practice Islam or people perceived to be Muslim. When Islamophobia appears in the workplace, it may lead to employees being harassed or marginalized or discriminated against. And it can take very different forms. Possible scenarios include a business refusing to hire a Muslim woman because she's wearing a hijab or religious headscarf, or a Middle Eastern employee being called a terrorist by managers and coworkers who may think it's funny or ingratiating rather than humiliating, or an Arab Muslim employee being fired by her supervisor who would share with other coworkers that they didn't want the Muslim employee around because he or she adhered to Islam and where her people come from, or an employer denying a request for a religious accommodation while accommodating similar requests from Christian employees. Federal and state laws protect us from Islamophobia in the workplace. Tonight in Your Legal Rights, we examine Islamophobia in the workplace, and we invite you to bring us your questions. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, you may call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. But please remember that our guests are here to educate and inform. Can't necessarily give you legal advice in a case they haven't seen. And remember, the opinions expressed on this program may not necessarily be the opinions of KALW, our guests, National Public Radio, the Bar Association that underwrites us, or perhaps the employers or clients of our guests. But they're here to inform. They want to make you part of the discussion, so please feel free to call us. And who's with us tonight? Well, we have the chair of the American Bar Association's Center for Human Rights and co-chair of the American Bar Association's Task Force to Combat Islamophobia. Rula Alush is a trial attorney handling a range of litigation matters, including the areas of employment, commercial disputes, civil rights, personal injury, and appeals. Also joining us, Zahar Berlou serves as executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, San Francisco Bay Area. That is the CARE SFBA office, the oldest CARE chapter office. Since joining in 2009, Zahar has led the organization through a period of six-fold growth. Outside of her work with CARE, Zahar bakes birthday cakes for foster children through Cake for Kids and is a coordinator for Project Feed, a monthly homeless feeding effort in downtown San Francisco. And near and dear to my heart is a cat lover like myself. But with that said, Zahar, Rula, welcome both of you to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for having us.
Let me begin by asking the ultimate fundamental question. What is Islamophobia? I see a pointed of a finger, so I think, Zahar, that one's going to fall on you if you're okay with that. What's Islamophobia?
Okay. This is so funny. It's, you know, we can see each other's upper bodies, but we're relying on voices. And so I'm like, what's happening? How do I follow the cues?
And when we have people on as guests on the program from different parts of the country, sometimes pointing to one another on the screen isn't perceptible from those of us that are on the screen. We can't see who's being pointed at. So it's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's a new world.
It is. And it brings us so much closer together, which I'm so appreciative of. You know, I've seen a lot of definitions of Islamophobia over the years. And so the moment you pointed to me, I was like, well, I could read from memory. I could go to the CARE website, or I could just Google it and see what artificial intelligence tells me. And so the AI definition of Islamophobia is a dislike of or prejudice against Islam or Muslims, especially as a political force. When I discuss Islamophobia, I explain that it exists on a spectrum. There are people who hate Muslims because they are hateful people and they are spreading fear and misinformation. And then there are people who mean well, but sometimes have never met a Muslim. And so they are consuming that misinformation. And so we address those ends of the spectrum differently, but that's what AI says. I would say hate or prejudice against Islam and Muslims.
Really, would you like to add to that?
I think AI does a great job with that definition. I think that often when I explain it to people, you know, the formal definitions use things in terms like irrational fear of Muslims, hatred towards Muslims. And really, to me, it manifests in anti-Muslim bias and anti-Muslim actions, whether it be against a group of Muslims, an individual, or people who are perceived to be Muslim, because we know that it's a phenomenon and something that impacts us as a community individually as Muslims, but it's much broader in terms of the impact.
And people don't realize when you talk about somebody who's Muslim, you're talking about a very large swath of the world's population. And to take people from regions as far apart as Indonesia or the Middle East, or even people that practice Islam within the United States, and to paint them by one brush, you're not dealing with a rational idea about what it means.
Yeah, that's very true. And I often share with people that one of my favorite things about attending our places of worship here in the U.S. is seeing the diversity of our community in front of me, because as you know, Jeff, I mean, there are so many people from different backgrounds who are coming together in the mosque as a prayer space, but also in other community spaces. And they really reflect the various corners of the world, including various corners of our country.
It's very analogous to looking at Christianity and judging people because they're Christian. There's all kinds of faiths within Christianity. There's all kinds of cultures. There's all kinds of different countries where that is practiced. You can't judge people with one brush. Both Ukraine and Russia have similar roots, and they're both Christian, but they're hardly friends. They hardly see the world the same way.
That's right.
So more germane to our discussion tonight, I wanted to focus a little bit more about when Islamophobia hits the workspace. It could lead to all sorts of things, can it?
In short,
absolutely. Go ahead, Rula. This time you go first.
Okay. The easy answer to that is yes. There are so many different ways. I often get calls from people referring. That's the space I'm in, is I often get calls from someone saying, such and such was talking about this issue. Shouldn't they call you? Isn't that an issue for them in the workplace? And almost every time it's yes, have them call, or have them call CARE, or have them reach out, because they are being treated differently at work because of their religious beliefs or practices. and it's in a way that falls outside of the protections that the law has for us to show up to work as people of various religious backgrounds.
And we'll discuss in more detail later, but it can manifest itself in all sorts of things. It may be discrimination because of the perception of where people are from or their ancestry. It may refer to people that are getting denied positions.
Yeah, hiring, firing, retaliation, decisions about what roles people are given, advancement opportunities, pay, accommodations for practices during work hours. The list probably goes on and on, right, Zahra?
Yes, and I was thinking the other thing I would add is workplace harassment, right? So maybe you are moving up in the ranks or you're not seeking a promotion, but every day that you're coming to work, you're walking on eggshells because you don't know what your boss or coworker is going to say that's Islamophobic, and how they might treat you differently based on your actual or perceived religion.
And somewhat analogous to Judaism, there seems to be, when people become intolerant, they tend to meld national origin with the religion people practice. And the discrimination could take any one of a number of forms involving things that aren't necessarily linked.
Yes. Yes, and there's also the reality that people who are not Muslim will face Islamophobia. So Palestinian Christians, for example, as well as Sikh Americans and others. And so I would add that to just how this morphs out of control in a way that is very concerning and endangers not just the targeted group, but others who might be associated with them.
So even if it's somebody, for example, who wears a turban, but they're from one of the numerous ethnicities within India where men wear turbans, they get lumped in and treated the same way. And I've heard myriad versions of that story after 9/11 when they were nowhere near.
Right. The first person killed after 9/11 in a hate crime was a Sikh American. And the people that hate others are unfortunately also so ignorant, they know nothing about them and can't tell the difference between communities.
And Islamophobia is nothing new. It's very, very old, is it not?
Yes, yes. When I talk about Islamophobia in the faith communities that I do a lot of my work in, I actually go so far as to say that anti-Muslim hate existed from the time that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, is believed to have rallied the first Muslims. And in some ways before that, Muslims believe in all of the Judeo-Christian prophets, and so believe that the message that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, brought was the same as what Moses brought to Pharaoh, as what Jesus brought to the Romans, and the list goes on. And so the hate of Muslims or the beliefs that Muslims accept is not new or recent. And so when we think about it, we are able to contextualize it in sort of in terms of how it exists in history. And then, of course, when we look at American history, we only need to go really to the beginning. Africans who were kidnapped from Africa and brought over to the United States to be enslaved included many, many Muslims, and their kidnappers, who called themselves their owners, took issue with their faith and worked very hard to prevent their practice of it, which is why today upwards of one-thirds of American Muslims are African-American, and many are coming back to the faith after generations of having had it erased from their life, family, and lineage.
We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment. I'd like to turn it over to my friends in the next studio who have provided this space for us and continue to do so.
And you're listening to Your Legal Rights on 91.7 KALW and online kalw.org. I'm Joanne Marr, along with our development director, John Carroll. And why are we taking this short pause? during Your Legal Rights. Well, we're in the middle of KALW's fall membership drive. It's a short drive, and before you know it, it'll be over. So we need to do our part to reach our goal by this Monday. So you should call 800-525-9917 or go online and make your contribution at kalw.org, kalw.org for this hour of Your Legal Rights. Our goal is 6 calls or clicks. That's 6 of you donating at kalw.org or calling 800-525-9917.
And Joanne, as you said, this is our fall membership campaign, and we only come to you a few short times a year to ask for your support, because it's really your investment in the work that we are doing here. It's your donation, it is
your generosity that allows us to do the work that we do, to provide these programs, to do the Your Legal Rights and other shows like this. It's really unique on the radio dial, and we can only do it and have only been able to do it because of the generous support of our listeners. And so if you have never given to this station, if you've been thinking about it for a while, maybe you're already giving. Perhaps you could give just a little bit more. Maybe go from $5 a month to $10 a month. If you've never given, maybe you could start at $5 a month. Maybe you could start at $25 a month. Whatever works for you, the important part is that you take this opportunity right now to stand up and be counted and be part of this community, become part of the KALW family, and support this kind of work that we're doing. 1-800-525-9917 is the number you can call, or you can go online at kalw.org and click donate to make that gift of support.
And kudos to Jeff Hayden for taking on Islamophobia as tonight's topic. This is a challenging and controversial topic to take on, a kind of topic that a lot of us would like to sweep under the rug and look away from. But we at KALW do not shy away from difficult topics. We need to have open discussions about discrimination in the workplace, and KALW provides a platform for these different points of view. 800-525-9917 is the way you support these conversations, to continue happening. 800-KALW-917 or online, kalw.org. And we're going to return to Your Legal Rights in just a few seconds, but we're waiting for you to call right now. $50 is all it takes to join KALW. And if you're feeling flush, consider becoming a monthly supporter at $10 or $20 a month. We appreciate any or all amounts that come into KALW at kalw.org or 800-525-9917. And now back to you, Jeff.
Where we left off was a general understanding of what Islamophobia is, why it's been around so long, largely because of misperceptions and misunderstanding. Let's talk a little bit about Islamophobia in practice and some of the things that we see in the workplace. What are some of the different forms it can take? I know, Rula, you do a lot of employment work, so I'll start with you. Can you give us some examples of different forms it can take?
Yeah, we've seen cases that range from challenges for Muslim women who choose to wear hijab, for example, and either difficulty with getting hired. One example that I don't think I'll forget for many years is when a potential and prospective employer told a young woman that they were not hiring her, and they told her it was because of her hijab. So, you know, from an evidentiary standpoint, that one was a relatively easy case for the care team to take on because of the outright statement that was made. But more often, it's less clear and it's less direct. Oftentimes, it comes in the form of failure to accommodate things like the need to take time for prayer. And what I've seen in a number of instances is that an employer with a particular supervisor in place might be accommodating of a practice, and then a new supervisor might come in, and then the new supervisor will no longer permit break times in a way that accommodate prayer times or may not permit changes in schedule during the month of Ramadan, for example, when the Muslim employee is fasting. And I've seen enough of those instances where it suggests to me that that in part is impacted by the supervisor's own misperceptions and biases that he or she may have and how that's manifesting in the treatment of the employees.
It's kind of difficult to understand that some employers will bend over backwards to accommodate Christians and religious holidays and practices that are so mainstream throughout the country. Absolutely no problem with them accommodating those. But when you have people coming from outside of Christianity, where perhaps some of the accommodations needed look a little different to them, perhaps a little foreign to them, those accommodations aren't made. Is that really what you're finding in some of these instances?
Yeah, in a lot of instances, and quite frankly, from personal experience as well. I mean, I'm a Muslim who has worked at a number of law firms, and my experience practicing and celebrating my religious holidays can be quite different than my Christian colleagues who automatically have days off, and there's time, space created. People know where people are or are not going to be around those holidays. But I'm often, even though I'm setting the out of office and I'm communicating to the team that it's a holiday and I'm going to be out, often getting calls and messages and texts. And that's a disruption that colleagues of other faith communities aren't experiencing.
We were talking before going on the air about some other ways that this manifests itself. You brought up the example where an employer goes on to social media, doesn't identify as employer, completely detached from the job, and says something, perhaps something favorable to Palestinians or something that might not be in keeping with some of the supervisor's beliefs, and they face some sort of discipline at work or mistreatment of some sort. Is that something that you've seen?
Yes, and unfortunately far too much of it in the past 10 or 11 months, where I can think of multiple examples really from across the country. I'm a lawyer, I'm keyed into the legal community, so a lot of what I've heard has to do with treatment of law students and especially junior lawyers at law firms for that kind of act. But I've also seen and heard about cases involving doctors and teachers, all kinds of different professionals who are being subjected to disciplinary action at work up to and including termination as a result of, in some instances, something as simple as saying Free Palestine on a private social media account. And how troubling that is, you know, in terms of First Amendment issues that we could go down the path of getting into, but from an employment context, I think that one of the parts of this issue that's getting lost in the discussion about it is how employers are picking and choosing what private personal comments and social media statements to discipline and which ones are not being disciplined, and how that's impacting our community disproportionately as well.
Isn't that kind of rule number one when you're looking at First Amendment activity and regulating it? You're really supposed to be content neutral? I mean, it's different. It's different if you're going outside the boundaries, you're getting into hate speech, things like that. Clearly there's boundaries. But otherwise, shouldn't it be fairly, the analysis be fairly neutral?
The policies that are neutral are typically the ones that are upheld and fall and considered to be consistent with law when they're applied inconsistently, and especially when you can sense biases around how supervisors and employers are policing some language and not others, is where there can be a lot of trouble for the employers.
We may have some employers listening tonight. It's inconceivable that we don't. For anybody that's facing some of these issues as it relates to religious accommodations and requests that are made, is there some sources or somewhere online that you can suggest, a calendar perhaps, where an employer could find some of these holidays and understand and prepare in advance so that people can better be able to enjoy their practice, their religious practice, and the employer has enough notice to really be able to respond?
I'm happy to jump in. So CARE produces an employer's guide to Islamic religious practices, and I'm happy to share that with you, Jeff, so that maybe it could be posted online, if that's an option. I would also recommend two additional things. One is the EEOC has abundant guidance on religious accommodations, and so that's a great resource for both employers and employees. Employers who are trying their best to understand the law and abide by it, and then employees who have questions about how do I ask for time off, what are my rights, like, and how to move through that process. The other thing I would recommend, honestly, from an employer perspective, is this is a really great opportunity to develop team buy-in, right? So as you develop your annual calendar, maybe what you do is you ask the team, like, are there religious holidays that you want us to know of in advance, so that one, we can inform your colleagues and have an opportunity to develop cultural competence, and two, plan your workload and deadlines accordingly. I say this as, you know, as someone who employs a majority Muslim team, but has people on the team who are Christian or Jewish or not practicing any faith. And sometimes I will acknowledge I have my own blind spots, right? Like, I know when the Muslim holidays are, but I remember at one point I had a Jewish employee and I didn't know which holiday she needed. But through interacting with her and engaging with her proactively, we really set ourselves up for both supporting her and complying with the law.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We're working on some interesting shows coming up in the next few weeks. Tonight, as you would know from listening, we are talking about Islamophobia, and in particular, Islamophobia in the workplace. Next week, we have a session on the upcoming term of the United States Supreme Court, which has been given us so many surprising rulings the last few years. Not all for better. And we're taking a look, projecting ahead what's coming over the next year. That's next week on Your Legal Rights. On October 9th, we feature a program on anti-Semitism in the workplace. And then on the 16th, we are working on a program to look at the upcoming Proposition 36 on the ballot. Is it the right solution? Is it really going to help, or is it going to make things worse? We will talk, and have both sides represented, talking about Proposition 36. That is the criminal justice reform measure. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. And now, back to Jeff Hayden and Your Legal Rights.
So we were just starting to talk a little bit about the workplace and some of the forms that this takes. And I'd like to finish with a couple more before we move on to really where I wanted to focus the rest of the broadcast and what people can do about it. But one of the other things we spoke of is, and I opened the show with this, is somebody that maybe these guys that he works with are having some fun at his expense, or maybe they think they're being funny and that he's enjoying it too, but they refer to an employee as a terrorist because of its ethnicity or national origin. And the company's not doing anything to stop this harassment. Is this something you deal with frequently?
very frequently. I can think of numerous examples of people reaching out to say that they're being subjected to that type of, as you describe it, Jeff, joking. And, you know, that's the employer's terms, that's the coworker's terms, but for the employee that's in this position and has these coworkers and colleagues and often supervisors with supervisory authority and with, you know, managerial responsibilities to this employee, creating this environment that's really hostile for the employee and makes it, you know, it can be something that creates a feeling in the employee of not wanting to be in the workspace, but it can also lead to challenges where they're even seeking medical attention because of how stressful and how much anxiety can come as a result of that type of behavior.
And isn't that the bottom line? It's one of the times when people who are saying insensitive things, and I wish I could say I have never in my life said something insensitive, but when somebody says something a bit insensitive and they've lost how the other person might be perceiving it, even if it wasn't intentional, I think we've all done it, and we all benefit from knowing that we're prone to it and to try to stay ahead of it. Have you dealt with much? Is there much going on in the way of people that are actually disciplined or fired because of supervisory personnel who are concerned about their ethnicity or perhaps the fact that they're practicing?
Are you asking if we've seen cases of employees being fired because of supervisor bias?
Yes. You said it with a label. That tells me that you're seeing a lot of it.
Yes, we are. You know, in general, it was something we were already seeing. And so sometimes, you know, as Rula mentioned, that bias is going to manifest as harassment. And those are the easiest cases, honestly, because if I come to work and my supervisor has repeatedly called me a terrorist or a towel head or, you know, other offensive things, and then fires me, that's like, you know, their legal counsel is going to have a field day trying not to fight that, like trying to fight that lawsuit because they're going to lose, right? Those are actually the easiest cases, I would say, is when they make it that direct. What we see other times is a Muslim employee is asking for an accommodation. Either they want to wear their headscarf or they, you know, need to take a 2-hour lunch on Fridays and are willing to work extra to go to congregational prayer or they won't drink alcohol at the company social. Like the way this impacts people can vary so significantly. And then you see consequences. Those are a little bit harder to prove. And many employers are really diligent about documenting other reasons to terminate a person or to discipline a person. And so one of the things that we advise employees on is if your workplace is hostile, right, and you are experiencing this level of harassment, start to look for the other job now. And this is like my least favorite advice to give people, but the worst case scenario is you stay, you're fired or mistreated or you don't get promoted, and then you don't have adequate evidence to win, to say, like, I was mistreated and I deserve X. And it doesn't mean you weren't mistreated. It just means the evidence isn't sufficient because the standard is high and the process is long, right? And so even the process, like, let's say you have everything in order, it can take, sure, sometimes we'll settle a case very quickly, but sometimes it can take years to settle a case. Even the slam dunk ones, so-called. And so I tell people who start to experience these things or report these things, like, stay, document for yourself, gather evidence, do great work, dot your I's, cross your T's, do not give your employer a reason, right, to be able to point to if they're going to be engaging in punitive action, and start to look for another job. It's just, if you've got a mortgage and childcare or children in college, like, fight the good fight, but make sure you've got a financial plan as well. The other thing I'll say is that we have, at CARE, we have documented a 30-year high in complaints of Islamophobia. So I should have said that at the beginning. AI didn't remind me. But when we're tallying how many calls we are receiving from people who are seeking help because they're experiencing Islamophobia on the streets, with law enforcement, at school, or in the workplace, we are seeing worse numbers today than 2016 and 2017. And I'll let your listeners try to remember what was happening in 2016 and 2017. And much of that, as Rula said, is tied to the ongoing Israeli violence in Gaza. When we dehumanize people in other places, that comes home to roost. And we see that with how African Americans have been treated in the war on drugs, how Asian Americans and particularly Japanese Americans were treated during World War II. We cannot have a war that kills 40,000 people in 10 months or 500 people in 2 days, as is the case in Lebanon, and not expect that hate and that bias that enables our country to send weapons to Israel to do what it is doing to not manifest at home. And so in the context of this 30-year high, one of the top complaint areas we are receiving is specifically in employment and employment discrimination in particular.
And the reality is, sad though it is that both Jews and Muslims are facing tremendous discrimination, and the people that seem to be glomming onto it aren't Jews and Muslims that are attacking one another in the U.S. I'm not going to say there's none, but overwhelmingly, it's people who may be well-meaning and perhaps a little ignorant that are taking sides and that are abusing people who are thousands and thousands of miles away from what's going on, irrespective of which side you favor. And we'll take up the other part of this in 2 weeks when we deal with anti-Semitism. But it's rather amazing to see people that have no interest whatsoever in associating with where this is going on, and yet they jump on the bandwagon to marginalize unnecessarily. It's you're listening to your legal right. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll do this.
No, go ahead. You've got to do your station ID. I'll come back to it. We'll keep them hanging. What was she going to say?
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we're discussing Islamophobia in the workplace. My guests tonight include Rula Alush, chair of the American Bar Association's Center for Human Rights and co-chair of the American Bar Association's Task Force to Combat Islamophobia, and Zahra Bilou, the executive director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the San Francisco Bay Area chapter. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. We're talking Islamophobia in the workplace. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation, but we are at our point in our conversation, and we're back to Zahra to ask you what you were about to say.
I was going to agree with you, is that there are many people who unfortunately are either ignorant or malicious, who will utilize news and global events to drive hate between communities. And at the same time, a concern that we have been navigating is the, how do we distinguish anti-Semitism, which absolutely must be condemned, called out, and prohibited in every instance that it exists, from the weaponization of anti-Semitism to silence critique of Palestine. And so a lot of times when I'm thinking and talking about how we've moved through the last 11 months, I really prefer not to. So there's Islamophobia and anti-Semitism, which are, again, issues that are major and they predate October 2023. But when we're looking at the last 11 months, I really prefer to approach it as Palestine, Palestinian, and Palestine solidarity advocates and voices versus pro-Israel groups, because there are pro-Israel groups that are taking all advocacy for Palestine and labeling it as anti-Semitism. People have been attacked for wearing the keffiyeh, the traditional Palestinian headdress. They have been attacked for calling what is happening in Gaza right now a genocide. And when we label it all anti-Semitism, it muddies the water on what anti-Semitism really is, which is anti-Jewish hate. And we want to make that distinction. And some of the people that have been labeled anti-Semitic for their Palestine advocacy are themselves Jewish. And so that's why I prefer to remove it from Muslim and Jewish when we're talking about this specific timeline and some of what we are seeing right now. It is really, again, not to diminish Islamophobia and anti-Semitism, but calling out that there are pro-Palestinian voices and there are pro-Israeli voices. And when we make it about faith there, I think we lose track of what the real issue is.
That's absolutely fair. And in my opinion, there's a lot of people that are more than willing to share their hate around at both. But the fact is, when you look at people that have lived in this country for decades or longer, maybe a century or longer, and they practice a religion, or perhaps their ethnicity derives from a national origin in these other places far away from the world, sometimes the folks around us lose fact of a very simple fact. People of a particular faith, particular national origin, may have that in their family's background. But if people share these hostile beliefs, even if it's a country that is at war with us or hates us in this country, the fact is the individuals that are here chose to be here for a reason. And if they were truly aligned, they wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be part of our communities. They wouldn't have been living here for so long. And that's true with both people that practice Islam, people that are Jewish, and many other people that are discriminated against because of things that happen where their family may have come from, far, far removed. It's true with anti-Asian hate. It's true with, well, I won't go into a long list. I'll just say hate is hate. And the target tends to be moving at times. But what I really wanted to move on a bit and talk about some of the resources that are available. What state and federal laws protect me from Islamophobia in the workplace?
Well, so there are a number. I can chime in there, Jeff, and share that people should certainly look to local jurisdictions, because there are often federal, state, and even local ordinances that can protect them. And there are often, when you're going to be pursuing action for discrimination along these lines, that you would want to make sure that you comply with administrative requirements, because oftentimes there are requirements to exhaust those administrative remedies before you can pursue legal action in court. So there are nuances that people will want to make sure that they look to so that they're properly protecting their rights and their ability to litigate on issues if that's the situation they find themselves in.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW, but I do want to take a moment and pause, turn over to my friends in the studio, and talk a little bit about keeping programs like this one on the air, because there's no one else in the region that extends its studio to stations to broadcast like this, to topics like this. Let's talk a little bit about keeping the doors open. John, Joanne?
And the way we do that is by asking you to contribute during our fall fundraising campaign. The number to call is 800-525-9917, or go online, kalw.org, kalw.org. And for this hour of Your Legal Rights, our goal is six of you, six calls or clicks. That's six of you donating at kalw.org or 800-525-9917. $50 is all it takes to become a member. At the basic level, if you are feeling flush and you can afford more, consider becoming a monthly supporter at $10 or $20 a month. 800-525-9917 or kalw.org.
As they say, Joanne, no gift is too small and certainly no gift is too large. So we do appreciate you making your contributions to KLW. We are in the midst of our fall membership campaign. We only come to you just a few short days every so often during the year to ask you for your support, because we understand you're here to hear content and you're here to understand the issues and you're here to listen to the programming that you love. But occasionally, we have to ask you for this because we can only do what we do with your support. It is your support that has allowed us to be independent, that allows us to do programs like Your Legal Rights. I mean, I think of it in this way. This is a station that brings you conversations that get straight to the core of what it means to be a human. I mean, in all of its good and bad, you hear, you know, so many different things. And we're not really in the business of telling you what to think or how to feel, because we know that you're curious and smart like we are. I mean, that's what I love about this particular place with KLW, is that we are curious about these things. And we seek out the voices and the stories that challenge us, challenge perceptions, biases, assumptions, all of those things. And that's the kind of thing that you hear on all the airwaves here at KLW. And if you believe in that, and if you love that, and if you're interested in that, take a moment right now to make that investment in that kind of programming, because you don't hear it everywhere. I mean, this is pretty unique in what we do. So take this moment right now. Show us that level of support. Show us you care. Let us know what you think. You know, tell us what you like about KLW. Tell us what you'd like to hear at KLW. Call us right now, 1-800-525-9917. Or you can go online at kalw.org and click donate to make your gift of support. It could be as little as $5 a month. If you could afford more, that is terrific. But the important part is that you make that gift right now. 1-800-525-9917 is the number, or online at kalw.org.
And you're certainly not going to hear an in-depth discussion about Islamophobia in the workplace on many other radio stations. Right. And if you support what we're doing, addressing these controversial topics that need open discussion, 800-525-9917 or online kalw.org. And we're making a specific appeal to those of you who are fans of Your Legal Rights. And we're talking about members of the legal community, listeners who've been helped by Jeff Hayden's guests. Most of you have not ever given to KALW. It's time for you to step forward and take responsibility for supporting this radio station at kalw.org, kalw.org, or 800-525-9917.
And we have just a few thanks to give before we go back to Jeff and wrap it up with Your Legal Rights. We want to thank Richard Cowan in Oakland. I want to thank, where did it go? Sorry. Dan Frost in San Rafael, who wrote, "It's always interesting." And we want to thank Pierre in San Francisco that said, "Thanks for all you do." So thank you all for your gifts of support. We do appreciate it. You can join the KLW family as well. You can make your investment in the work that we do. 1-800-525-9917 is that number, or online at kalw.org.
And now back to Your Legal Rights and Jeff Hayden.
Where I'd like to focus on our remaining time is on some of the remedies, some of the places you can go for relief. We were talking a little bit about Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But doesn't the state California Fair Employment and Housing Act provide some relief also?
Absolutely. So Rula alluded to this. She recommended that people check their local regulations. And so in California, there are even more protections. This is a really great place to be an employee. Small examples of this include just employer size, right? So you have to be a larger size for the Title VII to apply, but the Fair Employment and Housing Act applies to smaller organizations and really protects people all the way down. We are so progressive, and this is why doing employment work in this state breaks my heart, because people should not face discrimination here. As much as I work to change the law, I would say that in California, the law is good for employees. So if you are an employee in California and you are facing discrimination or harassment, the first thing we tell people to do is, if you can, talk to your employer, right? Obviously, that's not always going to be the case. So if you can, talk to your employer. If you can't, you're not sure, you want to consult, you want to file a complaint, go to the California Civil Rights Department. They have an online complaint filing process. And by the way, if you will later sue, you're going to need to have filed this complaint anyways. It costs nothing. You can do it yourself. And they will, their teams will work with you to investigate, to assess. And so document, document, document. Talk to your employer, talk to human resources, and feel free to go to the California Civil Rights Department, which, by the way, when you file a complaint with them, you can also do what we call cross-filing. So when you file with this agency, you can also like check off a little box and file with the EEOC as well, and vice versa. The other thing I'll offer is that people who are facing Islamophobia specifically, feel free to reach out to CARE in California. We've got over a dozen attorneys across the state and a team of over 100 that works to protect Muslims who are experiencing discrimination and proactively advise those who are seeking accommodations and want to understand how to do it and what to do. And if you're facing anti-Palestinian racism, right, which is what I talked about specifically, what people are seeing around their willingness and ability to speak up for Palestine and how they face retaliation when they do that, you can also call CARE about that. But our partners include a really great group called Palestine Legal, and they've been doing a lot of work with people facing issues in workplaces. And so start with the agencies, and if you don't know how to navigate that or you want help, come to us. Ultimately, our goal is to ensure that you never have to feel like you left your religion, your race, your ethnicity, or your national origin at home in order to thrive at work. We never want you to have to choose between putting food on the table for your family and practicing your sincerely held beliefs.
Now, we know that both under the Federal Employment and Housing Act and the California Fair Employment and Housing Act, they both require that employers make reasonable accommodations, and it may be on the employer to show hardship. Is there something employees can ask their employer to do to put these practices in place? Is there somewhere which they can go and get written materials that they can provide, maybe have them posted, let everybody know what their duties are? Everybody's nodding, but we do have a little dead air. I'll turn it to Rula. Or Zahra, if you're ready. Is there any place anybody
Rula,
can go?
No, Rula, I talked a lot.
I was going to defer on the California-specific point, but yes, for the employers who are listening, they should note that there are a number of postings that are often required of employers to be made available in common areas to employees so that they are advised of certain rights in the employment context. On the question about accommodation, the standard is really that the employer is required to accommodate an employee's religious beliefs unless the employer can show that the accommodation would cause an undue hardship. And in recent, I think it might have been a decision last year, recently the Supreme Court of the United States spoke to that issue and talked a bit more in its recent opinion about what undue hardship is and what it isn't. And, you know, ultimately, I think focused on a de minimis standard, that the standard is certainly still where the accommodation needs to take place unless it would cause an undue hardship, but that it has to be more than a de minimis hardship in order to meet that undue hardship standard. And really what it tells me as a litigator and hopefully employees who are seeking challenges is that the law is there to protect employees to do, as Zahra said, to show up to work in a way that doesn't force them to leave behind for the hours that they're at work, their religious beliefs, their religious practices, their identities that are important to them. And, you know, the conversation just reminds me, as we're focusing on the availability of these rights and the law's protection of them, that it ultimately is for the better, that it allows people to bring their full selves to the workplace and hopefully to then bring a perspective and experience that is unique to anyone else in that workplace. And the more of that perspective we have, the better we can perform whatever the job function is that we have. I mean, for lawyers, we serve our clients better when we have diverse perspectives, but there's so many different, you know, ways that we can look at that.
And unfortunately, we're out of time, and I would be remiss if I didn't add, and I don't want to put words in Zahra's mouth, but since we're out of time, I do want to say California has a California versus Hate website to report what they think is hate incidents and hate crime. It's available in many languages. Additionally, CARE has its own Know Your Rights as an Employee publication, which focuses more on federal Title VII than it does on California, but it does give lots of information. This is a conversation that could go on for a while, but unfortunately, we're out of time. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area, where tonight we've examined Islamophobia in the workplace. Our guests tonight include Rula Alouche of the American Bar Association Center for Human Rights and Zahra Ballou, the Executive Director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations in San Francisco. And tonight's show was produced by Beth Mora. Please be sure to join Your Legal Rights again next week, where we're looking at the upcoming Supreme Court year and all that might be there. Thanks again to our guests and to all of you for listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.